I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the feds are suing Washington State for providing in-state tuition rates to illegal aliens. Plus, Seattle teachers authorize a strike, saying they just care so much about the kids. And a 17-year-old arrested for robbery in the first degree and a slew of other crimes is the perfect example of the dangers of progressive empathy. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A ton to get to, including a little bit of breaking news. We actually broke it here on the show on social media right before we came on. The federal government suing the state of Washington for providing in-state tuition to illegal aliens. And they say that that is a blatant violation of federal law. So here it is, United States of America versus State of Washington, University of Washington Board of Regents, Washington State University Board of Regents, Washington State Board for Community and Technical Colleges, Board of Trustees for the Evergreen State College, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It says federal law prohibits illegal aliens from being eligible to receive post-secondary education benefits based on residence within a state if such benefits are denied to U.S. citizens residing in other states. That is the argument of the federal government. They go on to say Washington grants illegal aliens resident student status for in-state tuition if they have a high school diploma or its equivalent, live in Washington State for at least 1 year before entering an institution of higher education, and provide an affidavit declaring an intent to become a lawful permanent resident. So it's actually pretty easy if you're in the country illegally to get in-state tuition. It says Washington also allows illegal aliens to apply for and obtain state-funded grants. Washington denies the same financial assistance to U.S. citizens from other states. And in 2020, Washington enacted a law making illegal aliens eligible for state student loans. The federal government contends that these statutes constitute blatant, unequal treatment favoring illegal aliens over U.S. citizens. Such preferential treatment is squarely prohibited and preempted by federal law. As I said, you know, I got a heads up about this today. I broke the news on social media about an hour before we came on the show. I reached out to the Attorney General's office to ask them if they had comment on this suit. And the Attorney General's office said, we're just now in receipt of it and we are still reviewing. And then they'll get back to us with comment. But if, as the federal government lays out, there is a blatant preemption law, essentially, that says you can't treat illegal aliens better than U.S. citizens. And in this case, they can be illegal in the country and get in-state tuition, state-funded grants, and a cheaper path to higher education than a U.S. citizen who just happens to be living in a different state. Like, why would you give the illegal alien cheaper education than you would an illegal or a legal citizen, even if they're living in a state other than Washington State? So I think these are actions the federal government is going to be trying to take in other states that do the same thing. But this lawsuit dropping against the state of Washington this morning, just one of many actions the federal government has taken against our state. Speaking of education, I don't know if anybody's going to be getting education, illegal or legal, in the city of Seattle, at least, because the Seattle Teachers Union has decided to authorize a strike with a vote of 91% of members of Seattle's union saying, yeah, we're going to strike as the contract negotiations continue. And look, I'm not even going to get into the lame reasons why they say that they need to strike. It's always about, oh, we're doing it for the kids, but then they just want more money for themselves when they're already some of the highest paid teachers in the entire country. They have an awful lot of ability to be able to strike here and be protected. And so we'll see what happens. And they have the ultimate ability to keep kids out of class and get what they want, which I think is just such a crappy thing to do. I mean, I was heading to work today and I was took my dog for a walk beforehand and saw all the kids with their backpacks on in my city getting ready to go back to school. They started yesterday. And it's like, to do that to parents and kids who are ready to go back to school, prepared, parents are like figuring out their plans to combine work with school and all this stuff. And then you have teachers who say, oh, we're absolutely doing it for the kids. Here's how I know they're not doing it for the kids. Como News, in their story, they quoted the president of the Seattle Teachers Union, Ibijoke Idowu, who said, we don't want to strike, but unless the district starts prioritizing student learning and supports, the district is giving us no choice. We just love these darn kids so much. Well, if that name sounds familiar to you, Ibijoke Idowu, it's because there was just an investigation by the Seattle Public School District into her confirming that she indeed harmed students. Yeah, she was accused of screaming at kids, grabbing kids to do things. Several students will flinch when she comes near them. They are scared. She would tell kids who would cry over her behavior, I don't care about your crying. The district investigation also included photographs shared by a parent documenting bruising. Investigators concluded was more likely than not caused by Idowu. She grabbed one student by the arm, causing bruising and threw a hardcover book that struck another kid. But yeah, she doesn't want to strike unless the district starts prioritizing student learning and supports. She just cares about the kids so much that she's willing to lead her union into a strike. Gee, if she cared about the kids, maybe she wouldn't allegedly, as the district says she did, throw books at them, grab them aggressively to the point where they bruise, scream at them until they cry, and then tell them that she doesn't care about their crying. It's just too much. And meanwhile, the district's facing an $87 million budget deficit. So probably not the best time for teachers to be going on strike, demanding higher pay and holding education over kids' heads. And while Seattle Public School District potentially goes into a period of strikes, you're going to have a lot of kids who the only stability they have is school, especially in certain neighborhoods of Seattle where there are young Black men who are engaged in the gang life. School might just be the only thing that could turn things around for them. And these teachers who claim to care about, especially these young disenfranchised youth, what do you think they're going to do if the Seattle School District is on strike? Well, they're probably going to keep doing gang things, and some of them might even be killed. And we have an exclusive story on the show today that I think is just so indicative of this whole progressive leftist mindset over crime committed by juveniles, especially Black juveniles, and this fake care and concern that the left shows for them that is actually eventually going to get them killed and is going to get other people killed. So this is an exclusive here on Undivided. On May 29th at an AM PM in Seattle, there was a robbery that happened. And this was a pretty horrific robbery. So according to pictures we've obtained from police, the robbery included a gun to the back of the head of the store clerk. They, according to police reports, they entered the store. There was two suspects, appeared to be Black males in their teens or early 20s, 6 foot tall, wearing a Black face mask, gray Nike track suit, yellow Yeezy shoes. All of that will become important later on. So there was multiple suspects. I think it was like up to four. Suspect two entered the store, picked up a case of bottled water near the door. Suspect four, the case of water was used as a doorstop while the crew was inside. One of the suspects walked behind the sales counter, began manipulating the lock on one of the registers. He was unable to defeat the lock. Suspect one forced the store clerk to open it at gunpoint. You see that in that image right there. Gun to the back of the head of a store clerk. So suspect two, that's the one in the gray track suit, began collecting money from the register with suspect one once it was opened. So yeah, they walk in, these youths put a doorstop in the door, go behind the counter, hold this man at gunpoint to the back of the head until he opens the cash register so they can get the money. Will not be lost on yours. You won't be surprised by the fact that these were, at least one of them, a teenager. So one individual has now been charged in connection with this strong-armed robbery. His name is Drayshawn DeKing Rogers. He's the one who was identified as suspect number two in the gray track suit. So he is complicit in all of this, obviously. They have charged him with robbery in the first degree is one of the many charges that he now faces, because obviously you have the you know, gun to the back of the head makes it a robbery in the first degree. Unlawful possession of a firearm in the second degree. Unlawful possession of a machine gun part. So there was a switch on it that basically turned it from, in the gun they found, from a semi-automatic to an automatic. And they stole about $700. So three very serious charges: robbery in the first degree, unlawful possession of a firearm in the second degree, unlawful possession of a machine gun part. So according to police in this case, they end up using basically Meta and some social media and warrants and stuff to be able to track the individual in the track suit down. So they tracked his social media to an apartment he shares with his mom. They served a search warrant at the apartment, and they found, via that search warrant, the mask that was used in the robbery, the track suit he was wearing in the robbery, the shoes he was wearing in the robbery, as well as a Glock full auto switch extended magazine. Illegal, illegal, illegal for law-abiding citizens. You can't have a Glock when you're 17. You can't have a mechanism that allows it to become full auto, basically a machine gun, for anyone. And you can't have an extended magazine for anyone. And this is a gun that he's seen in with social media posts. So that's just some of the stuff that police use to sort of identify him based on clothing, based on guns, all of these things. Trace it back to the apartment that he lives at with his mother, okay? So this is about as serious as a crime as it gets for robbery. I mean, holding an innocent person at gunpoint back of the head, and all of them are complicit in that. Drayshawn wasn't the one who actually held the gun to the back of the head, but obviously he was there when it happened. He was born in 2008, so he's 17 years old right now. So what do you want to guess happened to Drayshawn when he showed up in court for this? Anybody? Anybody at all? Was complicit in a robbery where a clerk was held at gunpoint. Judge sent him home. Electronic home monitoring sent home to his mommy. The prosecutors had wanted him to be held in juvenile detention. They say he's got to be supervised by an adult at all times. No violation, no law violations. And he can go to school, if school's in session, obviously, which the Seattle Teachers Union will try to stop it from happening. But the court orders he's be released on conditions to his mother on electronic home monitoring. Now, keep in mind, again, when police found him and found the mask, the track suit, the shoes, the Glock, the full auto switch, the extended magazine, he was at his mother's house. He was at his mom's apartment. And so you're taking this kid who's with a gang of other teens willing to use deadly force to rob a convenience store. And you're saying you're going to send him back to the same apartment where all the evidence that he did these things is? How much supervision is he really getting from his mother? And this is a perfect example, as we discuss some of his background, of what toxic empathy can lead to. Because this is not Drayshawn DeKing Rogers' first interaction with law enforcement. In fact, we found this GoFundMe that someone put up on his behalf 4 years ago. At the time, he was living in Ellensburg in low-income housing. Apparently, there was a point where he moved out of Seattle to Ellensburg. And the GoFundMe says, I just want to read part of it, because the sob story is, I think, critical. This story is about my nephew, Drayshawn Rogers. At 14 years old, this young man has experienced what many have only witnessed in movies. He is the oldest of four kids, raised by a single mother in a Seattle neighborhood plagued by poverty and inner city violence. They have spent most of their lives without secure housing, bouncing between hotels and shelters, at times even sleeping in cars and on the streets. And look, that's very sad. You know, I don't want any kid to have to live in that situation. But basically what this GoFundMe says is he didn't have stable housing for 4 years. So she asked his mom, Precious, if he could move out with her in Ellensburg. And I think that probably wasn't a horrible idea, right? And so they move into town. And it says in this GoFundMe, unfortunately, this meant they had to leave their historically black community and move to a predominantly white town. says one day at the end of October, Drayshawn was playing with one of the neighborhood friends. And as they were chasing each other around with water guns, Drayshawn tripped another boy. The child who fell got up and walked away, as did Drayshawn, but later ended up with a leg injury and quickly blamed it on Drayshawn, claiming he intentionally hurt him. Dre was subsequently arrested on felony charges of assault too, an excessive charge for a child playing with friends, especially one with no criminal background, getting good grades, and playing on multiple sports teams. So in this GoFundMe, if you looked at this 4 years ago on an island, you would say, oh my gosh, poor kid. He was just like playing in a neighborhood with some other kid and like, oh, it was just horseplay. And then all of a sudden police show up and charge him with a felony, arrest him on a felony. Like, okay, if I didn't know anything else about what happened with this kid in the years that followed, I might say, well, wow, that's weird. I might want to look into that a little more. But of course, this young man ended up going on to live basically the gang life. So he's in Ellensburg 4 years ago, winds up back in Seattle. In April, he was shot at the Atlantic City boat ramp. Yes, this same 17-year-old. Drayshawn DeKing Rogers, who's now charged with a slew of felony crimes, including robbery in the first degree, unlawful possession of a firearm in the second degree, unlawful possession of a machine gun part. He was down at the Atlantic City boat ramp and he got shot. It's from the SPD blotter. Detectives are investigating a shooting early Tuesday morning that left a 17-year-old boy injured. It sounds so innocent. Oh, shooting. It just left a boy injured. At 3:30 a.m. 3:30 in the morning. This is just back in April. Gee. He's now, you know, supposed to be under electronic home monitoring, living with his mom, who's supposed to supervise him. Was he being supervised back in April at 3:30 a.m. when he was down at the Atlantic City boat ramp, a known area of gang and crime activity, and he got shot? It says the investigation revealed the victim was in a vehicle with two other boys, ages 13 and 17, and an unidentified driver. They were driving on Seward Park Avenue South when gunshots were heard and the victim was shot inside the vehicle. The driver then drove the teens to Skyway, dropped them off, and left the area. And then we've confirmed, we actually found his grandpa, I believe's social media pages. Just pray for my grandson. He is now henceforth facing a new challenge as the result of the remaining bullet. We need all the prayer and positive energy. And then he posted a description of a conversation he had with his grandson while he was in the hospital bed. He goes, I hate to be my own bearer of bad news. Just 3 days ago, my very own grandson, my black teenage grandson, was shot in the back. And then he had this weird post where he's like talking about their back and forth conversation. Grandpa, who was with you? Drayshawn, the usual friends, Grandpa. Grandpa, why are you out so late, grandson? Like, come on, grandson. I know you want to have fun, but out this late cannot be a good thing. Nothing but trouble awaits anybody this time in the morning. Drayshawn, Grandpa, I'm hungry and thirsty. I have not had anything to eat. Grandpa, you just came out of surgery, grandson. We gotta wait for the doctor to put in new orders saying you can eat. In the meantime, are you in pain? Yeah, I mean, at least Grandpa has the sense to know that nothing good happens at 3:30 in the morning at the Atlantic City boat launch. And this is what we always say about these young kids involved in this, like, gang-style activity, is today's victim is tomorrow's shooter, tomorrow's shooter is today's victim. And this is what toxic empathy is either going to do two things for Drayshawn. It's going to land him in prison, or he's going to wind up dead. And you can tell by all of this history that for the last 4 years, toxic empathy based on his skin pigmentation and his circumstances in life is what has allowed him to continue down this path. You know, going back to that GoFundMe, oh, it's just give us money because he, you know, he just tripped a kid. It was just horseplay. It really wasn't a big deal. And now he's facing a felony charge. Instead of like, hey, why'd you trip the kid? Why'd you hurt another kid? Why did you do that? Some accountability for him early on in life. Instead, it's no, he's a victim of his circumstances. And even his grandpa's, my black teenage grandson. It's like, it's more sad that he got shot in the back because he's black and he's a teenager. When you know that he's involved in this sort of activity and he's out at 3:30 in the morning and no one in his life seems to care to, I don't know, tell him, you got to stay home. You got to do these things. Absolute toxic empathy. And so what does it lead to? Well, he gets shot in the back. He's lucky he's alive. And what does he allegedly do with that second chance at life? He goes with his friends and they hold a convenience store clerk at gunpoint and rob a convenience store. and he's 17, and the judge, despite the seriousness of that crime, sends him home on electronic home monitoring back to his mom's apartment, who clearly isn't monitoring him very well. And so, look, he's 17. I bet he gets a slap on the wrist for this. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next year or two, we do a story about the fact that Drayshawn DeKing Rogers has been killed, has been murdered in some sort of gang shooting, or has killed someone else, because that is absolutely the trajectory he's going on. And then, of course, he's not back in school this fall because the Seattle Teachers Union cares so much about the kids that they're going to keep them out of school so Drayshawn and his friends can be down at the Atlantic City boat ramp at 3:30 in the morning shooting at each other, or can go find another AM/PM to rob at gunpoint. Yeah, teachers really care. The Seattle Public School teachers really care. The criminal justice system really cares about all these poor kids. We just want to give them a second chance. A second chance to die. That's what you're giving them. A second chance to die. A second chance to kill someone else. Punishments, repercussions are the only things that are going to work in cases like this. The progressive soft-on-crime policies are just a death sentence for these young Black youth. Absolutely outrageous. And they're still looking for the other individuals. Drayshawn is the only one who has been arrested by Seattle police so far. All right, coming up next, a new HHS report confirms what we already knew. There's a link between radical gender ideology and political violence. First, a lot of investors focused on AI, crypto, tech, but the real story is right now in energy, and you want to make sure that your current advisor isn't underestimating energy's impact on your retirement portfolio. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital for your free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Zach and his team can talk to you about how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so you've probably seen a bunch of headlines like this. This one's from Blaze Media. Our results shocked us. HHS report confirms your darkest suspicions about trans ideology. And I saw those headlines like, I think it was the New York Post headline, shocking study shows link between transgender ideology and left-wing violence. Who is shocked by that? Who is actually shocked by that? If you're shocked by that, you're not paying attention. But I do think this report is really interesting. And in full disclosure, the report from HHS is very long. There's a lot of numbers involved in it, a lot of methodology. I think it's worth reading if you really want to understand how they came to these conclusions. We could spend like 3 hours on it on the show. So I would recommend going to read the report in full, but I'll give you kind of the key highlights from it. So the report is titled, Where the Clinic Meets the Movement. Does gender ideology arm left-wing authoritarian psychology? So they said, across pre-registered analyses, related gender ideological beliefs measures were strongly associated with left-wing authoritarianism. They were also positively associated with justification of political violence across six targets that they asked subjects about. The killing of Charlie Kirk, the attempt to kill President Donald Trump, the killing of Brian Thompson, the healthcare CEO, arson of ICE buildings, damaging wealthy people's property, and violence against the police. All of that independently predicted violent outcomes after controlling for left-wing political identity. It says the findings suggest that gender ideology is associated with left-wing extremism and willingness to justify political violence, although it adds that experimental research is needed to determine causality. So here are the conclusions. People who strongly endorse gender ideology positions score dramatically higher on left-wing authoritarianism than their political identity alone would predict. So just because you've got like somebody who's progressive, they would still score lower if they didn't strongly endorse radical gender ideology. You get somebody with both, and that's a dramatically higher predictor of left-wing authoritarianism. It says, furthermore, it is a predictor for political violence. Together, these findings support the paper's core claim. Gender ideology may function as an ideological accelerant, telling left-wing authoritarian psychology who is the enemy, why the situation is urgent, and in those already disposed toward force, that violence is legitimate. And I think, again, this paper just puts into sort of scientific terms what we see happening with our own eyes. You saw it, well, the assassination of Charlie Kirk was carried out by a young man who was with somebody who was transgender, so definitely had the buy-in to radical transgender ideology. And after that assassination happened, you saw a fairly widespread among the far left assertion or excusal of it, that it's somehow justified because of words that Charlie Kirk has allegedly used in his life. Same with Donald Trump and the attempted assassination on Donald Trump, and definitely with the murder, cold-blooded murder of the healthcare CEO. I mean, you see the same groups of people who really push radical gender ideology engaged in this game of excuses, even for murder, if the murder is perpetrated against someone who they disagree with ideologically or who they disagree with politically. Same way that they justify vandalism against, you know, ICE facilities, police facilities, rich people's stuff. So they've justified in their head, and I think that's because, I'm not a scientist, but, you know, you've got these people who, if you can justify and make sense in your head that a man can become a woman and that they, like, should be able to be in women's spaces and sports, if you've justified that, you can justify anything. You can justify anything because now fantasy is reality to you. And so they don't have a kind of core moral compass and truth barometer. And so they're like, yeah, let's kill people we disagree with. All right, double dose of unbelievable takes us to California. All right, so Gavin Newsom signed the bill into law that has been dubbed the Stop Nick Shirley Act. So Nick Shirley and some politicians on the Republican side had a rally yesterday. Here's some video from it that Nick Shirley posted. And I thought it was so cool because look how many people showed up to like see Nick Shirley. They are so jazzed. He was signing shirts. He was signing babies. It was so cool because I love that you have this independent journalist who, because of his work exposing fraud, has like groupies, has become a celebrity. I think that that is just so cool. But the other thing that I saw at this event, and it goes into how like fraud has been treated and the investigation of fraud, Antifa showed up. Left-wing extremists showed up to what? Like hurt people? Over what? We have this video. What is the... And first of all, so they got trans pride flags. There's flags for Palestine. There's the socialism flag. There was like a couple Mexican flags. What does any of that have to do with Nick Shirley and investigating fraud? What does Palestine have to do with invest... Look at these losers. What does transgenderism have to do with investigating fraud? That's how unhinged these people are. It's like, yeah, they attacked people who were, I saw this video of two people, one of them had like a MAGA hat on who was just sitting in a coffee shop, and Antifa goons in all black came in there and dumped this blue substance all over them. It's like these people, first of all, they're deranged, but it just shows like, why is it controversial for Nick Shirley to investigate fraud and try to make sure that our hard-earned money isn't being wasted to the point where Antifa goons would show up and try to hurt people and try to stop the event from happening? It's like, choose a side, America. I know which side I'm on, but I had to play these two clips. So a New York Times reporter was trying to interview Nick Shirley. I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's like a 5-minute clip, but a couple takeaways. And this woman, who's probably in her 60s, she sounds so dumb. And you can tell by her questions that she's coming in with her story in her mind already made up and with an agenda. Here's a clip.
The people who are supporting this bill, like the... They say that has nothing to do with you, that it they introduced it long before you had come to California,
not
that
true.
It's really not about your work here.
Not true.
Why do you say it's not true?
Because I announced on January 31st I was coming to California. I had already filmed the videos. The word had already gotten out that I filmed inside these immigration support service providers.
Uh-huh.
And then they created the bill before I published the video.
They say that it has to do with work, like experiences that immigration service providers have been having for quite a long time, including last year, like that they were not aware of your work when they felt that there was a need for this bill.
Like she believes
it's a lie,
that.
Quite frankly. And there's already laws out for people that are being doxxed and for people that are being threatened.
Mm-hmm.
She says it like she believes it. Like that she's pushing. Oh, they say that this isn't about you. Gee, he does an investigation specifically into fraud and immigrant support services, and Democrats introduce a bill specifically to make it illegal to expose the identities of people specifically involved in immigration support services. Like, that's a journalist for the New York Times. The New York Times. And you can tell when, and she doesn't even have her facts right, when he says, well, actually, that's not true. I had already been here and teased it. And then they put out the bill. She's like, oh, it's like, yeah, maybe you're being, I don't know, and this is a stretch, lied to? Maybe you're being lied to? And then she was talking about like, oh, whoa, are these people like who are being harassed who haven't done anything wrong? And he says, well, that's not true that they haven't done anything wrong.
People said the Minnesota fraud wasn't true for a long time. And now we're seeing that people are being arrested nearly each and every single week, and people are pleading guilty to that fraud. But the Democrats and the mainstream media said that fraud wasn't real.
Okay, it's like a 60-year-old woman and you've got a 20-year-old streamer running laps around her, and you should watch it, Nick Shirley posted it, it's like a 5-minute interview. Every question she has with him is basically, oh, people say XYZ, and the people who say it are just the Democrats who are scared of the repercussions of, and the other thing that kills me about it is, and this is kind of similar to what we're dealing with here, it's the media that is cheering on the suppression of journalism and free speech. So she's almost in this interview cheering on the bill that would make criminal penalties for people who might record, capture on video and in photographs some of these taxpayer-funded service providers who are doing really shady stuff. The media should all be horrified by that. Same way they should be horrified of what's happening to me here and the lawfare against me. But no, they cheer it on because they hate conservatives. They hate conservatives more than they love the First Amendment. They hate conservatives more than they love freedom of the press. And that's a very terrifying thing when they're supposed to be the fourth estate that stands in the breach between you and the government. Wild. All right, socialism, as you know, has been taking hold across America. And if you think some of the insane things being spewed by Zohran Mamdani can't come to fruition here, well, they already are. First, we keep getting great emails from Undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the First Mark Challenge. Tara tells us, I switched my homeowners to First Mark, saved $1,600 a year. I have far better coverage. Greg had a different story to share. He said, I did the First Mark Challenge. It was really easy and really quick. They came back in 2 days telling me my policy was good and they couldn't improve upon it for the price. They suggested a couple changes that weren't costly, asked me to try back next year to see if rates changed. It was great customer service. I love hearing both those stories. So whether First Mark Insurance can save you money or not, they can make sure that you end the process really feeling confident about the insurance you have and that you have the best insurance at the right price, even if it means that they send you away without taking your business, because it's the right thing for you. It's the right thing for your family. And they are right here in Washington State. And so they want the best thing for you, even if it's not the best thing for them as a business. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. You could be the next First Mark Challenge victory. They've had over 11,000 of them. All right. So you will recall the horrific, scary statements against private property ownership uttered by the socialist mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani.
If your landlord does not responsibly steward your home, city government will step in.
Yeah, and take it and use it for their own purposes, for the collective. And I don't think people realize, like, we're really not too far away from that. We are not too far removed from the idea that if the government believes you're not a good steward of your property that you rent to other people, that the government will take it. I mean, you have the mayor of the largest city in the country saying just that, that that's the direction he wants to move in, passing special taxes on people based on how much their apartments are worth in New York City. And then in Washington State, we de facto are already doing public taking of private property. There's a lawsuit that's ongoing about that, where basically there's so many restrictions and regulations on private property owners that it's essentially the government just using the property for its own purposes anyway, like things like rent control, taking away the ability of landlords to decide who gets to live in their units, you know, criminal background checks, all of these things. And there's a ballot measure in Tacoma that if you're not already paying attention to, you absolutely need to pay attention to, because this is what it wants to do. It's the Safe Homes for All ballot initiative. They say they want stable, affordable housing through fair enforcement, okay? Fair enforcement. But how do I characterize that? Our mission, Tacoma for All, is a democratic membership organization that unites tenants, workers, and community members to transform Tacoma into a city governed by and for working people. Together, we are building a movement to abolish poverty, guarantee housing for all, dismantle racial inequalities, and secure a sustainable future. We understand that our local organizing is part of a larger fight against global systems of injustice. That's what they think landlords are, part of a global system of injustice. We draw inspiration from these global struggles and leverage our victories to inspire broader movements to transform society. So when they say guarantee housing for all, I mean, there's only one way to guarantee housing for all, and it's for the government to be the owner and arbitrator and decider of who lives where and who owns what. That is some very scary verbiage, and it's all cloaked under this, oh, we just want fairness. Fairness against the big, bad, evil landlords. And it's not a secret or lost on you that we have an advertiser, the Rental Housing Association of Washington. I'm very much in line with their mission, which is trying to protect private property ownership against some of these insane policies. So they're fighting back against this ballot initiative. Kevin Schilling with the RHA joins us. Kevin Schilling, welcome back to Undivided.
Happy to be back, Brandy.
So talk about what Tacoma voters are going to decide on in November.
So Tacoma for All, which is the Democratic Socialists of America's organization to push for their housing policy proposals, is giving the voters an opportunity to decide on their what they call their Safe Homes for All initiative, which isn't really about safe homes. It's really about Tacoma for All and the Democratic Socialists of America creating a policy regime that would allow tenants unions to essentially take over the direction of the rentals they are renting and require the property owners to do whatever the tenants unions want them to do. It would raise taxes because the city of Tacoma has a $40 million budget deficit. And it's because they're in a $40 million budget deficit, you have to raise taxes to fill a deficit. That's just how governments work. And it would raise rents because what it would do is it would create a massive legal parameter where individual people can essentially take any property owner to court, and property owners are going to have to raise taxes in order to cover the costs that are going to be associated with the legal framework that, if passed, this would create in the city of Tacoma. So higher taxes, higher rents, and more opportunity for your neighbors to take advantage of a situation to make it worse for everyone else.
Yeah, so my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, so in 2023, there was a Landlord Fairness Code initiative that was passed. But it's never really gone into effect because the city says it doesn't have enough money to actually enforce it. Is that correct?
Well, in 2023, it passed. And then in 2025, because city councils have to wait 2 years in order to change an initiative's law or change some of the rules around
it.
So in 2025, the Tacoma City Council, so just last year, changed some of the parameters to make it better because they realized they wouldn't be able to do what the initiative required to do. They didn't have the money or the capacity to do it. So they changed the parameters, and that just went into effect this year. So we've only had 6 or 7 months of the first version of it to go into effect before now Tacoma for All says that's not enough.
Sure.
Well, but Tacoma for All hasn't even given any time for the first version to come into effect. And Tacoma for All's main talking point is because there's only been one enforcement charge, only one enforcement charge. That is evidence of it not working. Well, maybe it's evidence of people following the rules and people
maybe
following
the law.
Maybe it's
evidence of you created a law, a problem in search of a solution.
So,
in search of a problem. A solution in search of a problem.
a solution in search of a problem. So they just want to create a framework to say, no, this means that people are just skirting the rules or skirting the law, and therefore we need stricter rules and stricter laws and expanding government's authority to tell you what to do or not to do. But when in effect, it's really not government's authority. It's these tenants' unions. It's the folks to say we're going to take over property. Really, this is not about growth. This is not about expanding housing. This is about ownership of private property. That's plain and simple what it's about.
Which is the goal of a lot of these socialist types, obviously. You saw it with Mamdani in New York, that it's like, well, if you're not good stewards of your property, we'll be good stewards of your property, which is just a terrifying concept. Now, I prefer something like this goes to voters than is just, you know, rammed through by a city council or something. But I always look at the money spent to manipulate voters, to lie to voters. We're dealing with that on a lot of fronts right now. Haven't they been calling you Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah. They just called. Yeah. And that I'm meddling in an election. And this is what I think is interesting about the arguments here. You know, they have no ability to defend their own law or their own policy proposal. They're trying to make you say the only way we can win this is by making you hate this person or by making you hate your neighbor. They're trying to say the extreme thing we're going to do, you should hate this person for. All I'm trying to do is present to Tacoma voters what I'm supposed to be presenting to Tacoma voters, which is the facts. I'm used to people bullying me. It's not something that's new to me. It's quite frankly pretty sad, though, that the only way that people on the extreme end of the political spectrum can get any wins is by bullying someone and making voters think that you have to hate somebody in order to get what you want. And normal people need to start really kind of owning the system and saying, no, wait a second. I don't want my taxes raised. I don't want people to tell me what I can and cannot do with my private property. I don't want people to tell me what I can and cannot do in my home. I don't want people to tell me what I can and cannot do. We really need folks to start waking up and paying attention.
Yeah, or before it's too late. Because, again, we're not far from this reality. We're not far from governments like Seattle and Tacoma and New York City saying, oh, well, you know, we'll just handle the property and we'll decide who's fit to rent your property and we'll just take it from you. And, oh, don't worry, we'll give you a fair price for it if they give you money for it at all or if they just seize it from you. So it's just really not a far-fetched idea. And we've already been on a long trajectory toward that in Washington State incrementally. And so, if you don't want to lose your home to the government, even if you are a progressive or a Democrat, just think about that. If the question is, do I want to lose my home to the government? And the answer is no, then you need to be voting against things like this. It's just absolutely outrageous. All right. Coming up next, we'll talk to my sister in Florida Report. Some spicy things happening in the state of Florida right now. First, if you're looking to sell your home, it's a tough market right now. There is a lot of listings on the market, which means your home can sit for longer. You might need to do a little bit more to make your home stand out. But our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com can help you with all of that. And he says right now he's hearing from a lot of people who are at the early stages of thinking about moving out of state because of the tax environment.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed and they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah, and you just got to get an early start. If your plan is to leave, I don't want to lose anybody, but because of all how many listings there are on the market, you need to make sure Wes will come in, they'll do a pre-listing inspection, which is really beneficial, stops any surprises on the back end, and they can also come in, make cosmetic updates, etc., to make sure that your home stands out in a crowded field. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, it's Thursday. That's when we go all the way to Florida, check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
I feel like you're really trying to help me sell subscriptions today.
No.
You look hot today. I'm not going to lie. You look hot.
Thank you. I did just get my hair done more blonde, so I guess that helps.
It's super blonde.
It is.
Yeah, and then the camouflage. I feel as if I'm going to make money off of you today.
Subscribe to the show.
Subscribe to the show. Like, you know, I don't think I'm ugly, but I wouldn't say like I have a lot of sex appeal, you know, because I'm kind of weird. So I don't think people subscribe because of my looks, but yeah, doing it.
You got
good for you.
You got the brain. You good, got the brain.
Sure. Yeah. People find that really sexy these days. My husband does. That's all that matters. All right. On the flock camera controversy. Apparently, Governor DeSantis is not a fan of flock cameras. This came up during a press conference on something else.
Yeah, he was having a press conference basically about the emergency management system of the state. You know, we're in the middle of hurricane season, but this also has to do with public safety as well, not just natural disasters. So he was asked by one of the journalists that was there about his opinion on flock cameras.
All right, here it is.
I'm all about having law enforcement have tools to be able to hold criminals accountable. I think that's important that we do that. And no one's been stronger on law enforcement than me. But I don't want to have this become a surveillance state. I don't want there to be a situation. And that's why we wanted an AI Bill of Rights. Remember, we were pushing for that because the flock is artificial intelligence. So whether it's online with digital surveillance or whether it's with cameras, at what point are we just going to be free to be not have to deal with any of that? And so I think it needs to be overhauled for sure. And when I see like a police officer using this to track like an ex-girlfriend, I'm like, you know, what the hell's going on, you know, with this? So I think this has happened very quickly. I think people are right to be concerned. I wanted an AI Bill of Rights that could have addressed this and other issues. I don't want to be in a situation where these tech companies, a handful of tech companies, know everything about you and know where you're going. And I know they collect a lot as it is, but I think it's going to get a lot worse unless we have some protections for the people in Florida.
Yeah. And look, I don't like the example that people use about the guy who used it to track his girlfriend, because I'm like, that's a one-off, and police, you know, individual officers can abuse all sorts of things in their, you know, profession. So I don't love that, but I don't disagree with him. And I'm not saying that I'm all like raw, raw flock cameras. I just don't buy that the left cares about privacy. I think the left just cares about criminals. So that's sort of my pushback I always have.
Yeah, that's they're a little hypocritical on that side. I mean, if you listen to his whole, you know, conversation about the flock cameras, he kind of just goes into how, you know, there's a state level of flock cameras, which is much smaller in number than the local levels. Mm-hmm. So you have like a city like Miami putting up their own number based on their own decision. And the state doesn't have a lot of oversight on that. So yeah. I think because they were implemented so quickly by so many different departments, where does the governance come in on how these are used, how these are implemented? And I think that that's an important conversation to have.
Yeah, ongoing conversation really across the country. All right, Florida leading another sting, resulting in the recovery of 163 missing children, which is just crazy, that are, you know, in sex trafficking or all number of just horrible things. A lot of them, you know, children that came across the southern border, I imagine, who were just lost in the interior of the country. AG James Utmeyer, who, again, he looks exactly like Tim Tebow. Can we talk about this?
He does.
I can't believe it. And as he's discussing this, it's relevant because now Tim Tebow has his foundation that has to do with like rescuing kids from sex trafficking and stuff. Am I the only one talking about the fact they look the same?
I think I've seen it mentioned on X like one or two times as I'm kind of like going through, you know, some commentary on him, but you're right. I mean, I think you mentioned it to me one time, and now I just can't unsee it. So
yeah, so set up this cut with the attorney general.
Yeah, so basically he was having a press conference just talking about the ongoing effort that we have in Florida to not only round up all these sexual predators, but find all these missing and exploited children. Some of them, you know, stolen right out of foster care systems. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, like you said, are coming across the border. They don't even really know they're missing until you find them. Mm-hmm. So he talks about the people that they caught, the amount of children that they've found so far, which exceeds 400 this year. But then he goes into just doubling down about how Florida takes care of people like this.
Yeah, here he is.
I want to say, as Attorney General, my promise is to make this the safest state to raise a family. And that's not just a slogan. We prove it with results. We have broken every record in the books the last year and a half when it comes to arrests, prosecutions, and convictions. We've taken down more child predators and violent offenders than ever, and that is not going to change. Florida will never be a haven for those that want to prey on our kids. If you come here and you do harm, you will pay for it. We will bring everything we have. We will throw the book at you. We will ensure that you are locked up forever. And where you are eligible, we will be seeking the death penalty for child sex abusers here in Florida.
We love that. Ah, we love that. That's good. I got some here that need to be put to death for sure.
Yeah. And DeSantis had signed this into law back in 2023 that makes sexual battery of a minor a capital felony. And they also, in Florida, you don't need a unanimous decision by the jury to put down a death penalty on somebody. It's just a supermajority of 8 and 4.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
I can foresee a lot of forthcoming death row inmates just based on that alone.
Yeah. And to be clear, unanimous to convict. But then when it comes to the death penalty phase, you're saying only 8 have to decide death penalty, which is interesting.
Exactly.
I never knew that. All right. Florida becomes the first state to block welfare cash for things like
theme parks, tattoos, piercings, psychic readings, and more.
Well, I guess I'm surprised that has to be enumerated. I'm surprised that it was allowed in the first place. And this is the first state to explicitly say, you can't use, TANF for tattoos.
Yeah. So I guess this is kind of changing the way EBT works, because TANF goes onto an EBT card, to more of an itemized, qualification rather than an establishment qualification. So just like they kind of put limitations on sodas and candy and energy drinks, they're doing the same, like they have it for tobacco and alcohol. They're doing the same for all these other things like entertainment venues, vapes, pornography products, and also tarot card readings.
Yeah, psychic and fortune-telling services, really critical. Yeah. For needy families. So apparently Florida already, like many states, bars EBT cards from being used or accepted for alcohol at adult entertainment establishments. Can't use them at the strip club. Like, and how do you even do that? You swipe and what is going on there? Casinos, commercial bingo locations. But this plan moves beyond merchant and location-based restrictions. And so now it has item-level restrictions. So as opposed to you can't use it at this establishment, for instance, you can't use it on these specific things, that might be in an establishment otherwise allowed.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely some bodegas in Miami you can go to and get your fortune read and buy snacks at the same place. So I understand needing to do that.
It's really a lot. One really quick thing I want to talk about, because I think it's going to become a thing. Yeah. So there is a tropical storm that's forming in the Atlantic. It was officially named this morning, and its name is
Dolly.
Why?
It's been chosen for years. The World Meteorological Organization keeps a name, like 6 years worth of names ready. They're already predetermined. The National Hurricane Center, one of their senior hurricane specialists, came out and made a statement just saying the timing of the use of the name Dolly for this storm is purely coincidental.
Yeah, I still think that they can skip it if they should skip it. Just the timing. It's like, especially when you have, there's a part of you that might say, it's sort of an honor, right? Dolly passed away and now here she is. But storms can kill people. And I just don't think, I think it's weird. I don't know why you don't just skip it.
Let's
agree to skip it.
The time to skip it is past because they've already named it. I don't know how that works. Historically, when they're tracking storms.
No law. There's not a law. Just skip it.
I don't think there's a law, but maybe it could cause confusion for people who are preparing in the way, preparing for the storm to come their way. It doesn't look like Dolly's going to become a major storm, but she did develop from just an invest overnight into a tropical storm. She's supposed to weaken before she gets to the, gets to the Caribbean, but there's a good chance that she could still become a storm once she gets to the Caribbean. So I hope that she just fizzles out and doesn't cause any, because she, it's hard. It's like a horrible time.
Ends in a rainbow. But think about that. That is such a coincidence. You've got 6 years of names and it lines up for the week she died. That's insane to me. So anyway, all right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. All right. Gosh, it's really hard, you know? I don't like Thursdays because I feel like I have to try harder so I can look somewhat prettier next to my sister. Super annoying. Anyway, let's get to comments from the live stream, shall we? Nicole, starting with the Fed suing Washington over in-state tuition for illegal, Slow Nomo says, why stop at secondary post-education? It should be all education. Yeah, I mean, are they paying taxes that help to fund public schools? I mean, look, there just shouldn't be illegal aliens here in the first place. But they definitely shouldn't get, that's just common sense. Why would they get a less expensive college education than an American? Make that make sense. I can't make that make sense. Okay, good.
Necrotushu says, colleges charge higher rates for out-of-state American citizens. How is it that they're going to give illegals free college?
Yeah, and that's the argument they're making. Yeah. All right, on the Seattle's approving a teacher's strike, Matthew Cook says, the point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. That's from Gordon Gecko and the WA Teachers Union. Interesting. I don't know if that's a quote that's real, made up. I don't know.
Average Joe says striking teachers is ironic since they are following by example instead of leading by example. I am going to pout because I did not get everything I wanted. So screw everyone else.
Yeah. On the teen accused of armed robbery and released to his mommy, Baron of Gray Matter says civilizational seppuku. We get unalived by him or he gets unalived by the public. No one wins. And seppuku is a traditional Japanese ritual suicide. Is that the one where they like kneel and then take a dagger?
Ooh, I don't know.
I think it is. I saw it in a movie once.
Ooh.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So Matt says tolerance and apathy. Apathy are the last virtues of a dying society from Aristotle.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Jen Gallagher, I call it paying the price when the cost is low. Teach them young so they learn before the price of the crime is so high they can't move. And we had that longtime Seattle gang detective on the show who said that. Like, why not teach them consequences when the price, as Jen says, is low? Where it's like, yeah, you're going to get in trouble, but it's not going to be so bad. He's like, because we're just setting them up to then spend maybe decades in prison when they're adults and they commit a crime because they haven't learned their lesson. So it's not fair to them either, really.
Right. And both of those social posts that we shared that kind of talked about his previous things, like his grandpa and his aunt.
Yeah.
They're both like acting surprised that this kid is in trouble. But they both have like seemingly normal. I guess his grandpa ran for city council. I don't think he made it very far, but still, like, that it's a good role model. So don't tell me that he doesn't have anyone in his life that's trying to help him or be a good role model for him. He obviously has some there. It's just that they're in denial about his activity. So he gets shot at 3 a.m. Why were you there? Oh, no, I was hungry. Okay. Okay.
Doesn't make any sense.
Don't be in denial.
If you really care, like, you call the cops. Those SPD detectives will absolutely come to your house if you're saying, my kid's trying to leave at 2:30 a.m. He's not supposed to. He's involved in all this stuff. He got shot. He's accused of armed robbery. They will absolutely come and talk to your child. I mean, he's not supposed to be leaving anyway, but they 100% will, because they're probably preventing a shooting by telling him you got to stay home.
Right.
Like, I'm going to sit outside, not let you leave. Let's see. Charles says the cops are being too nice. It's a machine gun, not a machine gun part. By classifying it as not explicitly a machine gun, it lowers the penalty. They need to step in, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, if a, like, white adult male was caught with this, it would be like, the AG's office would put out a press release. It would be like, you know, if it was a white male of any kind.
Yeah, exactly. The videos that this cop used to track this kid down are still up. Like, I was able to go on and look
at
them.
On his social media.
So why haven't you arrested anybody else? I mean, I know they're coming. I'm sure they're working on it, but I'm very impressed with this detective's work.
Well, yeah, the detective does all that work for him to be sent home to his mommy?
Right. To the place where he picked up the gun. Like, they found multiple guns, that gun at his house and then, you know, other things that were quite obviously used in this crime, and they just sent him back there?
Yeah. Outrageous. Okay. On Antifa raging at the Nick Shirley event, looking up for Jesus says, they're lucky the right exercises so much restraint. We really do. I mean, it's never like eye for an eye. I mean, they don't get throwing into fisticuffs with Antifa very often.
I just don't think we have that kind of rage in us.
No.
And I've said this many times, but, you know, on this this morning on the way here, I passed people holding up some Epstein sign on the freeway. Yeah. And there's so much rage in them that they are spending their free time, which I can only assume is their retired life because they look like they should be retired. They're spending all of that time that they should be traveling or hiking or seeing the, like, I don't know, doing something productive or meaningful. And they're standing on a overpass saying, show me the Epstein files.
Oh, what? My God. It really is sad. People it's need to so intervene sad, but in their lives.
That's so much rage that they have to get out. And virtue we just don't signaling. Have that kind of rage.
Yes. Deep virtue signaling and rage. Yeah. Analog James, no one can really understand the political left, that understanding that they are about making themselves feel superior. Right. Morally superior, which they're very clearly not. I'm not saying the right is perfect in moral superiority, but...
from John Thomas, which it always makes me think whenever I see his name, I think of Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Oh, I had the biggest
JTT,
crush on him.
Who didn't? I bet you some people watching don't even know who that wall. Is.
Keela versus the City of London opened the door for taking property like Mandami wants.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that case. I'll have to look either. Into it. Baron of Grey Matter, $10. Send this to Miranda for a drink of her choice. Holy moly. Yeah. And there's some troll in the comments saying we have hair extensions. We do not have hair extensions. Nope. Still no hair extensions.
You couldn't brush your hair as much as I see you brush your hair if you had extensions.
Yeah, it's all real. It's all mine, baby. Same with Miranda. She's got a lot of hair.
I think they say that because of the Secret Life of Mormon Housewives. All of theirs are extensions. Oh, yeah. And like one of them has a business in it.
Extensions
and it looks
very
similar.
Very obvious. Extensions are obvious, in my opinion. It's like my hair stops here and then it's like, but here's 7 more inches. It's like,
right.
I never see them done very well.
There's also, it's just a lot of hair. So you do have a lot of hair.
I do.
But on screen, you pull it to the front. So right now in the back, you probably don't have a lot of hair.
Yeah,
if you had extensions, it would be full back and front, like all that. So you can, you have just, you're very blessed. There you go.
There you go. We did miss 2 super chats yesterday. Son Miller, $50 for I don't know what. Thank you. And Brother Abe.
For another $1.99.
Yeah. Dollar store. Go to the dollar store. Don't be ungrateful. For Nicole's Dolly t-shirt supply. Don't be ungrateful from our friend Brother Abe.
No, I just might go towards it.
Okay. Towards it, yes.
There
we go. Going towards it.
Good deal.
All right. I do want to get to our subscriber show poll before we head into Sanity Check, because it is relevant to that topic. Should children be banned from having cell phones in the classroom? We've asked this question before, but I wanted to test the waters again, given that this is moving that direction in Washington State. So Nicole, yes or no, should kids be banned from having cell phones in class?
I don't think that it should be a law. That's the thing. I think it should be a policy and kids should respect it. Like I think I might have told this story already, but I was just had my cousins from Texas here and their kids aren't allowed to wear pajamas or Crocs to school. Our kids can wear whatever they want these days and use their phones. And that's the same. They have policies. They don't use their phone. But why does it have to be a law? Can we just...
Well, I think that this would be a policy through the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, but you know, and then,
the governor wants to make it a law.
I know. It's just way overreach. I mean, 64% of you say, yes, this is a good idea. I go with no, though, only because, yes, it's a good idea in a perfect situation, but we get stories all the time, thanks to kids having phones in class that expose these radical teachers and their radical agenda. Kim says, yes and no. Cell phones are distracting. They should be put away when in class unless used to record disgusting teachers.
We're going to have to bring back those little recorders.
Oh, yeah. Just a little secret tapes. Recording. Yes. Yeah. Well, and 12th Man says, well, that's why all classrooms should have audio and video for parents to see. That would be it for me. If you put audio and video, then yes, ban the cell phones from the classroom. But until there is somebody in there watching what's going on, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. Brady said, yeah, there should be cameras in the classroom. E said, ban the phone, add the pocket digital recorder. Nicole, see? To your point. Yes. The bucks. I would have said yes, but in this state where they're taking parental rights away, hell to the no. It's the only way to show what's happening in the classroom. Yeah, we would get all our good story leads. Dawn's wife says the teacher should confiscate the cell phone before class and let the students have it back after class or at recess time, depending on what level the student is. That way the student can check to see if any important messages came through, but not have it. I say just leave it in your locker. If you're going to do this, cell phone in the locker, you can use it in between classes. No big deal. But yeah, put cameras in the classrooms first. And with that... let's get to our closing sanity check on this very topic. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson talking about why he wants to make it illegal to have cell phones in school.
You don't need a study to show it, although studies do show it, that these devices are incredibly distracting in an academic setting, in a school setting. I feel just personally, I'm a pretty disciplined guy. I find these devices distracting, okay? I find them borderline addictive. This is a thing we can do that essentially costs no money that can really improve student learning and achievement all across our state. As governor, of course, I can also propose my own legislation. It's called essentially governor request legislation. So they go through the normal legislative process. It's got to pass the House, got to pass the Senate. I have to sign it into law. But every legislator knows it's coming from my office. So it's a real top priority for me. This will improve performance. It'll improve the classroom environment. It'll improve the school environment. It'll be great for kids, great for our teachers, great for educators.
Yeah, look, I don't disagree. It probably would improve performance in the classroom environment and learning, but you haven't seemed to care about that at all as test grades drop, as enrollment declines, as attendance declines, and you don't seem to care about teachers teaching wild, crazy LGBTQ plus A things in class that are definitely not helping with learning. So I think it's this matter of, like, do you really care about kids and their learning, or is this just sort of an easy win for you? And also, Bob Ferguson, you support kids cutting off their genitals, so I don't want you to talk about what's good and what's not good for children. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided, this week's episodes of Undivided. For subscribers, we'll see you Sunday for our episode of Sundays with Subscribers. For the rest of you, we'll see you back here Monday at noon, although I really do think you should sign up and become a subscriber so you can join us on Sundays. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. And that's basically it. You know, we're working on restock in the merch store with some new stuff. Hopefully to have that here end of September. Stay tuned for some big news that I might have on the legal front in the coming days. Keep glued to Patreon locals and social media. Yeah. Talk to you later.